sorry. But this little fishy needs us growing too.
The Linux Link Tech Show. The Linux Link Tech Show is on. Your link to the latest in GNU Linux and technology. An hour of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter. Free software, free speech, open source, open mics. Live from the Linux Link Tech Show studio, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up. Link it up. And take it away. Take it away.
Mute it. Oh, it's over now.
It's over?
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good to see you again, Alan.
Yes, last week I wasn't here, and you turned me off last week.
Good to see you again, Alan. You know why it's good? You know what came out last week? Good to see you again, Alice Cooper. First time on DVD.
Ah, I assume you have it now.
First time. You're damn right I have it. It is the original print. The original copy. There was two versions released, the original.
I remember you saying one was a bootleg.
Well, they've shot it, and they didn't release the original, but they re-spliced in where they had they had little clips in there with Hair Director and the Baron chasing the Alice Cooper gang all over the country, and they spliced in film clips from movies of the 30s and 40s, and maybe some 50s movies. And they did it that way. But then they re-released the original with the original footage to Midnight Movies for a couple of years or something like that. It ran for a little bit way back in the mid-70s. And since then, it's been like just collecting dust on a shelf somewhere. Yep.
I've never seen it, so.
It's good.
Good. Most of the Midnight but movies you had ever saw, I can't remember
already,
anyways.
What? What was that, Link?
Didn't you have like a pirated copy of that or something?
I had
or
the bootleg.
Or some kind
yes,
of
I had the bootleg, which was the first version released, not the original. The original, I don't think you could have gotten anywhere from what I understand. But I have both copies now.
So what did you guys do, forget to turn my mic up again?
No, Alan was just barreling over top of you, like
Sorry.
Alan does.
Yeah, I blame it on Alan, yeah.
No, what I'm going to get is a splitter for the headphones here so I can listen to the stream and us at the same time rather than juggling the two headphones I'm wearing on my head now.
Good to see you again, Link.
Well, no, dude, you just put one earphone in one side of your ear there and one earphone in the other ear. And
well, that's what I had it. But
then you can be completely confused.
Well, it is. It's confusing because, like, the left ear is us live. Here, and then the right ear is the stream on it, and the stream is like 15 seconds behind us. So it makes it hard to concentrate.
Yeah.
Dan's typing away here.
I'm getting ready to put the image in the logo on the RSS feed for iTunes, so now we have a picture.
Well, I figure since we have an explicit tag now.
Yeah, that's a requirement now with the RSS feeds on iTunes that you have to make it standards compliant. You have to put the explicit tag in there and decide and define whether you're explicit or not. And I figured I'd err on the side of caution and give us an explicit tag.
For the occasional F-bomb.
Yeah, and the flip side is I make the...
The occasional F-bomb and hoagie guy story.
Yeah. I make the AUG RSS feed iTunes compliant, too, but we don't post that on the iTunes. I don't know why I did that. You know, I'm thinking, I'm like, the AUG file doesn't go out through iTunes.
In case they ever decide to put it there?
I don't know. I
don't think they'll ever go with AUG, but...
No. You know, speaking of AUG...
Yes, I agree. We're explicitly great.
Yeah, Nokia released a tablet, or quote tablet, Linux tablet PC. Was it
that 7700 or something like that?
Yes,
770.
Yeah, for like $395. I was looking at that, and the specs do not to say that it doesn't have OGG support, or they don't list OGG support in the specs. And you figure it's a Linux device.
No, but they list it as being Debian Linux, right?
Right.
Do we have a page for that? Yeah, so I'd like to take a look at it.
It's a wonderful, beautiful looking thing. I'm sure you can get OGG support on it, though.
Yeah, I'm sure, too, but it would be nice if it came out of the box. Yeah, there's a page for it, but it's Flash-based, so if I bring it up on my PPC, it'll probably destroy my browser, and it'll hem and haw and complain. I guess the downside to it, from what I've heard, one of the downsides is that it doesn't have touchscreen support, really. I mean, you can't,
How's
like...
How's it a tablet, then?
Yeah, I don't know. Why did he build it as a tablet PC?
It has a
palm
touch
just like
screen
a
on it, dude.
What?
But it has a touch screen on it. A touch screen, and it gives you a stylus.
I heard that you can't like actually write notes or something with it. There isn't any... I don't know. That's just some of the things I picked up from Dig and other places where I was listening to comments and I read a little review. I didn't look too deeply into it. I mean, I figure, you know, maybe if work says, hey, we want to get you a Palm, I'll try and convince them into getting me that instead of a tungsten. Because I don't like Palm devices, PDAs.
I'll tell you what, I was looking at that at the website, and I think that looks slicker than hell, man. I would love to get one. But, you know, I'm kind of holding off waiting for those $100 laptops that are supposed to be, you know, hitting the world pretty soon. I keep hearing about those.
Aren't those going out to third world countries and stuff? Well,
you have
to buy them in bulk.
Some kind of market here.
Yeah, I think
you have
to buy them in just a huge amount at a time.
And you got to hook it up to your bicycle so you get to generate enough power for it.
It says the product runs on Linux-based Internet Tablet 2005 Software Edition.
What is it?
That's what they're saying. The operating system is Linux-based Internet Tablet 2005 Software Edition. It is an operating system upgrade. Nokia is planning to launch next year. Oh, I'm sorry. It's a 2006 Software Edition. To support more mainstream and novelty services, including Internet telephony and instant messaging.
I mean, it looks like a really interesting product. I mean, seriously.
Go back to buy it now and see how much it is. Buy it online for how much?
Yeah, buy me one now, Alan.
I'm just curious to see
how
much.
You got money, man.
Gee, I wish I had money.
Got money, man.
$359.
Somebody out there listening to the show has got to have some money, man. Hook us up.
You had.
Buy us all one of these and we'll be your internal friend.
Your internal friend?
Eternal. Not internal.
I'm married, man. I don't want to be anybody's internal friend. I'll be their eternal friend.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I said. It just may have sounded bad, but... you know my crappy accent. Hey, if you buy it online, you get free shipping now.
Oh, boy.
There you go.
Ooh.
There's your free link. Just buy it, and they'll give you the free shipping.
Sure.
I mean, it looks good. It does. I'm surprised there's not a whole lot of other Linux handheld devices out there yet.
Well, you know, eventually what we needed is a breakthrough item, and maybe this is it, you know? I keep waiting for that one breakthrough item where everybody has to have one and it runs Linux and that's how people are getting exposed to the operating system. Maybe this is it. Maybe this will be a big market hit and everybody will want one instead of their, you know, stupid cell phones that take pictures and play MP3 files and whatever the hell else. And people will get a little Linux exposure and won't be so damn afraid of it if it lands on their desktop somewhere.
So this is just this is not a phone, this is just a browser.
Right. It's an internet appliance.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, it's not too bad.
It has its pros, it has its cons. What are you going to do?
Web browser, email client, internet radio, newsreader, media players, image viewer, file manager, search, calculator. Yeah, got all the same crap on it.
Yeah. I mean, I would love to have one of these for, like, work. You know what I mean? Like, if I'm walking around on the floor and I got to do something and hit a website and, you know, search for stuff, that would be really, really awesome. Just for, you know, just for that purpose. But I can see where it would come in handy for, you know, whatever, car rides or whatnot.
Yeah.
Hey, why not? Do it up.
I finally got that script to work for the Myth to, well, it's Myth to iPod was the original script, but I actually changed some of the parameters so it actually streams out shows to my PlayStation. Well, it doesn't. I still have to copy them on there,
awesome.
But as it finishes recording a show, it then converts it over to PlayStation Portable format on it. I have to work on renaming it, but all I got to do is rename it, pop it onto the PlayStation Portable, and take it with me. Actually, it works pretty nice.
I'm waiting for. I want to get a GPA 2X. That's what I want.
And that is?
That's that $179 handheld gaming device that has Linux on it. It also has media support.
Okay.
TV out.
Cool.
So you can hook it up to your television set. Little gamepad.
Bring your porn with you.
Tons of emulators. MAME.
See, now that brings up a good point. They are coming out with some cool Linux-based media-type things. They have the Nokia 770 and that. What was that called again, Dan?
The GP2X game system from...
GP2X game system.
Yeah. Who's...
And I looked at, I remember you said something about that on your, you mentioned to a person, mentioned it to me personally and put it on your weblog, and we were talking about that, and I thought that was pretty cool, too. And then they also have that, what is it, like the Bulldog or something like that, that new USB computer that they came out with? You guys know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. There was also somebody put on the forum about a USB version of Ubuntu that I guess is... I didn't look too into it. It was on Tom's Hardware. It's listed on the forums. Did you see that today?
No, I didn't.
Guy suggested we talk about it, and here we are screwing it up. Thanks, Alan.
Which one? I'm sorry, I was doing something else.
Damn it, Alan.
Which distro?
It's Ubuntu. Where is it? Test drive in H2. Tom's Hardware. It's about an H2. Hold on.
Oh, that's the one with the little 3-gig drive.
Yeah, that right there. Linux to go.
Yeah, okay. I hadn't seen the pictures of it, but...
It looks pretty interesting. I mean, I guess that's... if you have a system... That's not a standalone system, is it?
No, it's supposed to, like, plug into your USB drive and boot up a Linux box.
Like I said, I'm...
Right, just like that Bulldog thing, right?
I think it's similar, yeah.
Yeah, 3-gig capacity. Looks pretty cool. I guess you have to have a system that'll boot off of USB.
I bet that'd help.
Yeah, it would help a lot. I wonder what the price is on that. Maybe I'll... I don't know. Could be ordered online. $132.
Not too bad.
Well, if you have a system that will boot off a USB, from my, I don't know. I haven't looked at it, but it looks pretty cool. I guess I should probably... No, you can go to the forum and see it. Definitely go to the forum. I upgraded the wife's laptop to Breezy last night.
How'd she like it?
Ooh.
Took a damn long time, man. Holy mackerel. Had to download almost
the upgrade does take a long time, though, you know?
Yeah, and then, you know, it gets kind of wonky because you got to do that apt-get force. Because if you don't do the force, it just bombs out. But, yeah, it's pretty smooth. I got it all up and running, and I brought it downstairs because I didn't do it wirelessly because I didn't think that would be a good idea. So I brought it down and I
probably not.
Yeah, fired it up and I'm like, well, what happened to the NDS wrapper driver? And I'm like, what the hell's going on here? And I'm just about getting ready to configure it, and I go to plug the machine in to the little hub I have downstairs, And I noticed that the hub's off, so I plugged the hub in, and I start downloading the driver to reset it all up. And then right before I load in the driver again, it hits me. The wireless access point is connected to that hub that was unplugged, which is the reason why I wasn't getting an IP address when it was trying to boot up. It was like, duh.
Oops.
Yeah. But it was pretty smooth. Her only complaint so far was that OpenOffice 2 did not use her preferences from OpenOffice 1. Because it used to have OpenOffice 1 and then OpenOffice 1.9. I think it was the beta release of 2.0. And she customized it. And then 2 didn't take that custom configuration for some reason. So she has to re-customize the toolbars and everything that she did. And I was in there looking at it, and I'm like, well, I see the original OpenOffice.org directory that when you run it the first time, it usually sets itself up in your home directory. Mm-hmm. But there isn't one for OpenOffice 2 that I've seen yet. But somehow it's retaining settings somewhere, so I got to look further into it. I didn't pay too much attention. And when I wanted to go look at it today, she wanted to use her computer. So, you know, it's one of those things.
How dare she want to use
it? Damn straight. I got stuff I want to do. You guys use...
Speaking of which, there are more Ubuntu updates today, and I probably have to do that to my wife's computer, too.
Yeah, well, speaking of updates, what's the name of that quote, Linux worm that's going around there? What is that called?
You know, I don't remember what the name is, but I read the specs on it, and it's pretty weak, man.
It's a new worm targets Lupper. That's it.
Lupper.
And see, the problem with this is it's not a Linux worm. It takes advantage of certain...
It's a PHP worm.
PHP, which I do believe, if I'm not mistaken, and I've looked at a couple different articles and resources on this, that if you have your X system, whatever it is, running a web server with PHP... And you have those scripts in there and those files, no matter what OS you're on, you could get compromised. Am I correct?
No, you're not. You're partially correct, but not totally correct. What it does is it's looking for a really, really weak PHP install, like when you have your registered globals on and stuff like that.
Right.
And it's using those PHP exploits to gain entry into your web server system. However, most PHP installs now at this point, like newer, clean PHP installs, don't have any of that crap running. And so you can't get in and use that exploit. Plus, if you look at the files it's looking for, it's only looking like maybe a dozen different pieces of software. You know what I mean? So it's not like something that takes advantage of any custom holes that you might have left open from personal programming or something like that. It's looking for, you know, it's looking for known stuff through, you know, Bblogger or something like that.
Right, but what I'm saying is if you were running...
Even then, you have to have your PHP has to be really insecure.
If you were running basically the same PHP setup with the same application on FreeBSD, would you be just as susceptible?
Just as susceptible on FreeBSD, Windows, Solaris, you name it.
Right, but that's what I was saying. So it doesn't...
Has nothing to do with Linux at all.
Yeah, it's not really a Linux worm. It's a PHP worm.
Which is what it appears to be, but they originally said that it was a Linux worm, which a lot of people have kind of busted. I think somebody equated it to saying, you know, it's as much as a Linux worm as if there was... a flaw in Macromedia's Flash Player on Windows, so it would be a Windows worm. That's the equation that they were talking about right there. What are you going to do? I'm switching. I'm going back to Windows now.
Yep.
That's the way it's going to be.
Not me. I'm giving up. I'm going back to DOS.
Format... A colon.
Go back to Abacus.
Abacus. But that was, happy days. Either of you guys Because I don't think Pat's on, because he's sick. Either you guys tried Clicks yet?
No, not yet.
No, I haven't, but Pat is on. He's on the IRC chat.
I played around...
Only because I haven't had any problems with just my... The standard five-step install, you know?
Yeah.
Exception of using check install at the end, so in case I don't like it, just boom, blow it away.
I tried using Clicks on Ubuntu, and I'm just not having the same great, wonderful experience everybody else seems to be having. And I don't know why, damn it.
And this wonderful experience would be? One-click install?
One-click, not install, but one-click run.
Okay.
It'll drop it down. Like, you guys listened to the TPN this week, right? The one where they talked about Clicks? Maybe you didn't. And she pulled down Penguin Command or something like that. And I figured, you know, I've used Clicks successfully on some other stuff. But I decided to try it because I haven't played Penguin Command in a while, so I figured I'd try it. And I tried to run it, and then it froze my KDE session on me. It didn't, like, freeze it on me, but it, like, took over the mouse, and then it locked the mouse, and then the program itself crashed and wouldn't run. I don't know. So I'm not having a good Clicks experience so far, 100%. Some of it seems to work.
Only half your headphone working there, Dan?
Yeah.
My Click experience has been absolutely perfect, and I'm going to tell you why.
Because you ain't using it.
Two reasons. One, I don't run KDE, and two, I don't run Click.
Well, that would work.
So, I'm good that way.
No, I turned the volume down. Over here, I didn't realize there was two volume knobs. I'm like, why am I putting this up and down? And it's all right.
I don't know, those $5 headphones are just too much for you there, Dan.
That's it. They confound and confuse me.
Hey, it's not the price. It was the thought, right, Alan?
That's it. That's all that matters.
Hey, they're Novas, man.
Yeah. No one else has headphones like that anywhere around here. I guarantee it.
No one else has had headphones like that in 20 years.
That's right. Exactly.
I still say we should have, like, put the little antenna on the top of them. They're perfect for that.
I'm either ready for a hearing test or an episode of Ultraman.
You know what they remind me of? I remember reading it, seeing in the Radio Shack catalog a long time ago, was the FM headphones that looked like that had the little antenna sticking out of the one side.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'm the only one that actually remembered ever seeing those.
No, the telescoping antenna, remember?
It was the metal antenna.
The
metal telescoping antenna, yeah. I remember
it was like
those.
Looking, you wear those things, end up looking like my favorite Martian.
Hey, what's this from, Alan? Hey, good looking, we'll be back to pick you up later. What was that from?
Not totally sure.
Nobody knows? Commercial on TV? They drove by. Hey, good looking, we'll be back to pick you up later. You don't remember what that's from?
Mr. Microphone.
That's right. Ron Fulfield's Mr. Microphone.
Mr. Microphone. Oh, wow.
Then the Pocket Fisherman.
I remember that.
And the Smokeless Ashtray.
Smokeless Ashtray. Yeah. He had the jerky machine. You can make your own beef jerky. It was basically just like a little heating element with a grill over top of it. Yeah.
And... the record cleaner, remember that? Where you put the record in there and it would spin
around,
and clean it. And all the rotisserie, man.
The rotisserie is...
Set it and forget it.
Set it and forget it.
But then the directions say, you really shouldn't forget it when you set it.
I don't know. You have one?
Right.
I do have one. I love it. It's great.
Dude, I think the Pocket Fisherman was the best one, though.
I do, yeah. Even though I haven't fished in, like, years, I mean, that was, like, great to have in, like, the back of the car or something when I did actually fish. Because I did
spray
actually
on
have
hair.
One, so. Spray on hair.
My mom went through a phase where she loved rotisserie chicken. So for Christmas or for her birthday, I bought her a rotisserie. But the thing is, she didn't want a rotisserie. She wanted a rotisserie chicken. You know, it's a complete opposite of, you know, give a man a fish, he'll eat for a day. Teach him how to fish, he'll eat for his life.
She wants you to make the chicken for.
Yeah, she didn't want to learn to fish. She wanted to fish. She wanted the rotisserie chicken.
Smart lady.
That's it. I don't know if
you
she
know, if you'd have just bought her like three or four rotisserie chickens, she'd have been happy with that.
That's it. It would save me fair sum of money.
Saying spray on hair. I laughed at that. It's like his spray on hair is nothing more than colored powder. It was great.
But I bet you a lot of people bought it.
Colored powder in an aerosol can.
You guys don't know how much I wish that I had actually seen somebody that was using that when that was out.
Oh, yeah. I can't imagine anybody.
I had bated breath, holding my breath, waiting to see somebody with that in their head, man.
Imagine what happened the first time you got caught in the rain. It's colored slop falling off your hair. Yum, all right.
Talk, Alan. I'm busy chatting on the IRC.
Are you busy chatting? What do you want to talk about?
Talk about the new Slackware 10.2. Well, actually, isn't even really new anymore. But
yeah,
I'm really digging it on my laptop.
I've had it on the laptop here.
Yeah, it's been out for a while, but I just installed it last week.
And you're liking it? I take it.
It's awesome. It's like it's got to be probably two or three times faster than the last Slackware install that I had on my laptop.
It went on really easy. Like I said, I've just been lazy. I haven't put any of my stuff that I had originally on here back, like bookmarks and shit like that. But it works really great. I like it. I've got to get it upgraded onto my desktop machine now. And I'm slowly making backups of everything.
Good stuff,
Good eats.
Alton Brown would say it's good eats.
Good eats.
Good eats.
Dehydrator out of a window fan and some air filters. I want to see you put one of those together, Dan.
With that fan right there, blow dust right through everything, right?
Well, yeah, I think we want to start with a cleaner fan than what's in the window right now. But I haven't seen Good Eats in quite a while. I used to watch that religiously, and I haven't had chance to sit down and watch it lately.
I watch it. I have it on season pass.
Actually, now what I should do is put it on Myth.
An awesome person to have as a guest on the show.
Yeah, you think we should email him and see if he'll come on?
I went to one of his shows in Allentown.
I think that would be cool.
At one of those Wegman Fets they had in Allentown. They had him one. Actually, they had him last year. I missed him last year, but the year before that. And it's basically he sat and talked for an hour on how to cook an egg.
Yeah.
It was really, really interesting.
And Chef America.
Yeah, Iron Chef.
I guess we better call our guest.
I want Morimoto to be on.
This is going to be fun. Call him up and transfer him into the chat and hope everything goes right.
Yeah.
Woo!
All right, Link, I'm going to hang up on
you. If it doesn't, folks, I'll be dropping off.
Yeah, so we'll be back to you in just a minute. All right? All right?
Mm.
Okay.
Wahoo, huh? Wahoo,
yeah, we'll be back with you in just a minute. I'm going to call him and then transfer him in.
Unless he does it like you did to me last week.
We'll be back in just a minute.
All right.
Go to it, man. I'm listening on the stream. Here we go.
All right. I hope this works. We tested it like six times before the show.
which only means that it's not going to work now.
I'm nervous.
God, what is that?
It's the dial. The ring.
Hi there, Stephen Von Nickel speaking.
Hi, Stephen. It's Dan from the Linux Link Tech Show.
Hi there. How's it going?
All right. Just want to let you know you're live right now.
Well, I guess I must be alive. I do have a pulse, and I would say from that slight delay that something interesting is happening to the audio signal, so yeah.
All right. Stephen, I'm going to transfer you into our conference where Link is. So we can all be on.
Alrighty, sounds
and,
good.
And I'll be right back with you in just a minute, but you will be in the conference with Link. So hold on.
Sounds good.
Let's hope that worked.
I don't know. I didn't hear the little beep go off.
No, I'm going in now. Hello.
Hi there. Stephen Von Nichols here.
Hello.
Great.
All right, this worked.
Hello, can you hear me?
Oh, we hear you perfectly.
Excellent.
All right.
Can you guys hear me still?
Yeah, we hear you, Link.
All right. I'll shut up now.
No, you could go ahead and do your talking. Stephen, thank you very much for coming on the show tonight. You're the senior editor at Ziff Davis?
Yep, Ziff Davis Internet, which means E-Week, Linux devices, desktop Linux, Linux Watch, and a couple of other odds and ends. Basically, my hat is, if it has something to do with Linux or open source, I should at least know about it. I might not, actually, as things go, but I should at least know about what we're doing in any of our publications.
So you've really got your finger on the pulse of the Linux and open source community, then.
Well, I try. Some days I'm more successful than others, but I do try. So I'll be happy to chat to you about Linux or open source or how journalism handles the above or whatever strikes your fancy.
You know, that's a good point right there.
You know, what I think is funny. Go ahead, Dan.
No, you go ahead, Link. Go ahead.
I was going to say what I think is funny is that, I was reading a lot about you today.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of your articles, and you have a fantastic amount of Linux and open source articles online. And I keep getting copies of your byline where it does your a description of you and things like that. And I'm thinking all these people have been telling me for the years that you got to be some kind of rocket scientist to run Linux, and here we are going to interview mm-hmm. a guy that worked for the DOD and NASA. So I thought that was funny.
That's true. Well, there is a reason why Linux and rocket science goes together. But it's not because, actually, that you have to be super bright to use Linux, because that really isn't true, particularly with some of the easy-to-use distros out there now, like, of course, my mind just went blank, Simply Methus, Linspire, Zandros, you can just stick these things in and run, no problem about it. But the real reason why there's a connection between NASA and Linux is that, frankly, although it sometimes appears to people on the outside looking in like NASA has a lot of money, it doesn't have really much money at all. It is, since the 60s, it's been a shoestring operation. Once we got to the moon, the real money stopped flowing. And as a result of that, we still have these projects, and people still have to make these things work. But when you don't have money, you have to get creative. And open source software is nothing if not creative. And that's, one reason why, I worked at Goddard Space Flight Center for most of my time at NASA, which is, as some people in the audience know, will be where Beowulf, the first true Linux cluster, came from. And Beowulf Linux clustering came about simply because we didn't have the resources to do anything else. I wasn't involved with the Beowulf project, but I knew the people who were doing it, and I knew exactly why they were doing it. They needed a cheap supercomputer. And, there was Linux. There were these old boxes, and thus Beowulf was born.
And that's a pretty hot project there, Beowulf. That's really, Linux clustering in general has really taken off.
Yeah, it really has. And it's taking off more so than I think a lot of people realize that it has. Right now, if you're in big business circles, the hot topic right now is virtualization. Now, what the heck is virtualization? Unfortunately, right now it's one of those terms that it's kind of fuzzy on the edges, but what it really is about is clustering and supercomputing. We getting all these boxes so they have so much raw power that you can just sort of say, okay, you pretend to be this part of the computer because we've got so much power we can afford to do that and still get great performance, and you do this job, you do that job, and so on. And Linux clustering is going to become, I think, in the next year or two, a really hot area where there'll be a lot of interesting work going on. And maybe even a new company or two making some serious money from it. It'll be interesting to watch.
Yeah, I mean, it's it is very, very interesting. But turning it around to the desktop, you had mentioned a handful of easy-to-use distributions, Mepis, Zandros, Linspire. A lot of those those three distributions that you speak of, it seems like the Linux community almost gets a little sour taste in their mouth because they start to mention Linspire. You got, you know, proprietary issues and making it, you know, the concern about everybody running as root, and Zandros, again, with you know, being a little proprietary, and Mepis, which, I don't know, did that drop off the face of the earth, or is that still going? I mean, there's been some...
Oh, yeah, Mepis is still, you know, very much alive and well and ticking along there. You know, one reason why you may not have heard of that much about Mepis itself doing stuff recently is they got really involved with Ian Murdoch and the whole Debian Core Consortium, except that's not really its name now, thing. So they're putting a lot of their time and effort into, you know, sort of improving that, you know, that line of the Debian descent. You know, as you know, as for the others, I don't really think it's so much the proprietary issue there. I think that a lot of old-school Linux people who, you know, their first experiences with Linux were with some of the really sort of primal Linux distributions, where the canard that Linux is difficult to use, where it really sort of came from. You know, those people who know their shell commands backwards and forwards, that kind of thing, and, you know, Slackware was their first distribution, and Slackware is still their main distribution. I think some of those people are just sort of resentful that basically, you know, Linux has really gotten easy. I mean, I recently ended up writing a story about a short little piece about Linux command line tools, and along the way I realized that as I was writing this in response to some readers I've been hearing from, I was writing this for an audience which didn't really get that to really get their hands deep into the system and make it do what they want, occasionally you still need to go back to shell scripts and command lines. And I thought, what's happened here? This is ridiculous. I have to explain to a Linux audience that you can't do everything with a GUI? My God, what is... This is just so different from how it used to be. And I think, you know, it's kind of like when you find a new band and it's really cool, but then they become really popular, and then you get people saying, oh, they've sold out and so on. I see people getting resentful at all these distributions, and, you know, Red Hat probably gets the most resentment. And I think for the most part, it's really just sort of misplaced. It's just that Linux has become much more popular than people thought that it would. I mean, people talked about, you know, Linux sort of conquering the world. Well, in a way, it really is, and when that happens, though, you know, the dynamic changes. It's no longer this neat thing that we insiders know about. It's now something the whole world is sharing with.
You know where I see that big line of resentment coming towards Linux, more so than from, you know, the old Linux people to the new Linux people, is from the old Unix people towards Linux. I see a lot of big resentment going on there all the time.
Yeah, I've I actually cut my teeth on Unix. I mean, I've been using this stuff since System 7 Unix, which I don't want to think about how long ago that was. Let's just say that 7-track tape was what I used for storage media in those days. We didn't have 9-track tape yet, and I suspect 90% of the audience don't even know what I'm talking about, which is fine. This is ancient history now. Yeah, but I think a lot of the Unix people, I surely know this is the case at Sun, which is one reason why it sort of seems like Sun is schizophrenic at times about sometimes they love Linux, sometimes they hate Linux, and it's hard to tell from day to day what you're going to get. I think you really see there is the old, it depends on sort of like who's in, who's on the rise on any particular day. When the old Sun-off people are feeling their oats and so on, you know, they tend to be really down on Linux, because in many ways Linux has been the success story that Unix was supposed to be, but it never was. So I think there's just a lot of resentment of that. tech, for that matter, you could even say that that's one of the reasons why SEO started the home madness that they started a couple of years ago.
So in your opinion, do you think Linux...
Yeah, I think they just want a bigger piece of the pie.
Yeah, well, you know, that too. No question about it.
In your opinion, do you think Linux is ready for the general user desktop?
I think it's ready for the business user desktop. I won't say general user because a lot of people still like to play games. You know, I mean, let's face it. For most people, a personal computer is about the web, which Linux can do as good as anybody. Email, same thing, as good as anybody. And games. And, okay, and games, you know, Linux is not there. I mean, Loki software tried and flopped, really, when you get right down to it, you know. Hats off to the good people there who worked and booze to the bad people who worked there, but, you know, it just didn't go. And so in a business, you don't care that much if you can't run the latest World of Warcraft or Guild Wars or whatever strikes your fancy. But the home, you know, that still is a real problem. And, you know, I'm not sure that actually is ever really going to get solved, but I don't think that Windows is going to solve it either. If I... What I see happening as we move ahead with games and computers is I see consoles continuing to become more and more dominant. People who tend to think PC game-centric don't really realize how much a bigger deal the consoles are in terms of dollars spent on them and so on. But, you know, to get back to the main point, yeah, I mean, Linux is more than ready for a business desktop or somebody who just wants to get work done at home. I mean, there's no question about it in my mind. It's there. Use it.
So aside from games, probably say one of the things that we've been talking about that's problematic is video codecs, DVD.
Right.
Legal DVD. And, of course, right now, aside from Magnatunes and a few others, is being able to purchase music electronically online and, you know, integrate it or upload it to your personal music playing device, be it an iPod or an iAudio, an iRiver, or whatever MP3/multimedia player that you have.
Well, I certainly hear you on that. That at this, at this very moment, I've got one of my desktops here in my office. I've got iTunes 4.9 running on top of Wine on top of SUSE 10. And I'm coming closer to being able to sync up with an iPod, but I'm not there yet. And even so, that's not really a Linux solution because I'm using Wine, which is a Windows application interface running on top of Linux to run a Windows app, iTunes. And... when I look at those problems, though, those really aren't technology problems per se. Those are all legal problems. And what I see happening right, really just in the last couple of weeks, is those problems I think are going to break, and they're going to break in a hurry. And that's because the television and movie industry has looked at what happened to the music industry, which tried their darndest to kill off file sharing. They killed off Napster. Well, something else sprang up. Then they killed that off, and now we've got BitTorrent there. And I think the movie and television people looked at this and said, you know what, we really can't stop it. And then they looked at Apple with iTunes and said, you know what, Apple has the right idea. They make money from it. And at the same time, the bottom line is they were making money off it. So why don't we do things like AOL is now going to be sending out all these old television shows, admittedly with a little bit of advertising put on them, you know, and all these other companies are moving to putting their TVs and their movies on. Of course, we've got all these content owners now, really, again, just in the last month, I guess, have decided, let's get our stuff out there so that people can get to it relatively cheaply or legally, and they have to watch some ads on it. And as they all do this, I think we're going to see a lot of this digital right management stuff and all these totally incompatible codexes disappear, because their real interest is going to be, they want to get the content out there to people. And the easiest way to get content out of there is rip out all the DRMs and say, okay, here is the codex. We don't have time or the expertise to write it up. You guys, here's the source code. Have fun. And, you know, the Linux people will take it from there. So, you know, I would say a year from now, the problems that you're describing, which are real problems today, aren't going to exist at all for anyone. Will be, you know, what I think is going to be interesting is seeing how the business models are going to change. And I don't think I think the movie business has learned the right lessons from the RIAA debacles with trying to regulate music. But how that really is going to work out, how that's going to change everything, it's going to be a really different world, but in what way different, I don't know. I just know that by this time next year, I expect to have, I don't know, SUSE 11 in front of me and running be able to watch a video from a DVD legally, no fuss, no muss, and being able to sync into my one terabyte iPod. Well, that may be a bit much, but you get the idea.
You know what? That's got to be the most optimistic thing I've heard in the past year. I mean, I really hope that you're right on that. I really do, because when I look
you
at
know,
the...
If you had asked me the same question, you know, 3 months ago, I would have said, you know what, it's going to be a long, hard road for the same, you know, the legal and business political reasons I mentioned before. But now, I mean, you can hardly, if you're like me, and because from what I do, I have to always keep my eyes on what's going on in technology, who's doing what to whom. I mean, it has just exploded. This is a real change in how the video people are viewing this. And the audio people are going to have to, the Sonys at all are going to have to follow along here in a hurry. Especially now that Sony is so...
Do you think
totally
that the RIAA has actually learned their lesson?
No, I don't think the RIAA has. But I think the distributors have figured it out. I mean, I know the big-time video distributors have looked upon this and said, you know what, Apple's right. You got to make this work. There's no point in trying to force everybody into living in the past. It's just not going to work. It just flat out isn't.
Now, what then has been the turning point? Because in the past week, I mean, 2 weeks, we've had the whole Sony apologizing for the rootkit debacle, then the rumors that their PlayStation 3, they're working on a technology to patent and make it impossible to use a PSP or PlayStation 3 disc on any other system once you've used it on your home system and be able to, you know, sell it back to, you know, use game vendor or trade it with somebody else. I mean, when we're talking like that and possibly using that technology into their DVDs and other media, what have you seen that has really changed the market or started this turnaround? Is the media just, like, behind in what's being reported and from what you're seeing?
It's not. Well, I see a couple of things happening here. One, again, is the video people have just seen. I mean, if you look at the Internet traffic right now, if you look at anybody like Netcraft that measures the raw traffic, what is the number one thing that eats up Internet bandwidth? And it outweighs the web, it outweighs VoIP, it outweighs email, even if all the spam, it outweighs email, it outweighs FTP, and that is, it's peer-to-peer. It is just, it's nothing else even comes close to it. So when everybody is doing it, and all previous attempts to stop it, circumvent it, whatever, have all flopped. I mean, you can either choose to ignore the fact, or you can say, you know what, Apple's making big-time money from this. We should adopt an Apple model and, you know, figure out a way to get people to pay for this stuff. Now, as far as, you know, Sony is concerned, Sony, the trouble with Sony and with their digital rights management stuff, which turned out to be a key for making real trouble with security rootkits. I really think Sony is in a world of trouble, and we're only, it's kind of like the Titanic. We know we've hit an iceberg. I don't think anyone really much realizes just how much trouble Sony is going to get into because of this, though. Because that rootkit junk that they put in there is really nasty stuff. It's really hard to detect. It's really hard to rip out. And it serves as a very nice model for other people to invent similar things. And I can see Sony getting themselves sued left, right, and sideways by people who find their Windows machines trashed by a viral rootkit, which once you look at the source code, you can say, you know what, that came from Sony originally. And this is, you can read, we've got some new coverage of it on eweek.com. It's pretty darn scary out if you're out there, if you're a Windows user now. Again, nobody really has realized this yet, but we see this coming, and it's ugly because this isn't like some of the virus situations in the past where, yes, it's deadly while it's here, but the viral people eventually catch up and fix their programs to catch it. This stuff is a lot harder to fix using traditional antiviral techniques. You know, 10% more. I mean, like, another quantum level harder to deal with.
Right.
Fortunately, on Linux, we don't have to worry about that yet. Hopefully, we never will.
Well, I hope so, too. And, you know, one of the things I want to ask you, and, you know, and listening to what you've been saying, it kind of makes
sure.
The question I was going to ask almost obsolete. But in going back with the proprietary codecs and the legality of using them, I mean, here today, legally I can't play a DVD on Linux or I can't watch Windows media files on Linux. And one of the things I was going to ask you, if you think in the future,
right.
You know, if they keep going down this road like this, what can a Linux user do? Would they be able to buy a license to watch DVDs? Would they be able to buy a license to... use the Windows Media Codecs. Is that available now, and or do you think that will be in the future?
It will be in the future. The DVDs, certainly. I mean, I imagine this time next year. I mean, you're just going to put your DVD into your Linux box as it. You know, you just installed the system, or hopefully you just. Bought a machine with Linux already installed from your CompUSA or your Office Depot, whatever, you bring it home and you just put the DVD in and you watch it, and that'll be it. Microsoft, no, they're going to hold on to their codecs for as long as possible, and I'm sure it will still be illegal to do anything with their, well, it won't, this is where things get really fuzzy, is what's legal and what's not legal with a codec. But I'm sure it will still be around. Microsoft will still have it proprietary. But I don't think it's going to matter that much because there'll be so much other content out there that is not bound up with a Microsoft codec that it's going to be one of those, yeah, it doesn't matter, or you'll use a transcoding program just to bring it over into something that's readable. So, you know, it's going to become one of those moot points. Yeah, you can't watch it, you know, so what? You know, just... get a copy from somebody who can will let you watch it.
But then that's not legal if you get a copy from somebody.
But I think that there will be other copies available, legal copies that will be available.
Oh.
If Microsoft still wants to stick it in their codec, that's fine. But you don't have to watch up the Microsoft version. You can watch somebody else's version, a legal copy of somebody else's version.
You know, what I thought was going to happen, and I thought this was going to happen, like, already, they're having all this problem with the codecs, and decoding DVDs is supposedly, quote-unquote, illegal on Linux. But I figured what would take off is the big movie corporations would start selling their movies online, you know, online versions of the movies where you could just, like, download the thing and watch
that.
It. And it would just be, you know, it'd be in a regular media file, so it really didn't matter whether or not you could play it on DVD because you have it, you know.
That's what's happening right now. In the last two or three weeks, you can see that happening. I mean, this isn't in my crystal ball, I predict. I mean, this is happening right now, today. And this is a trend that I can only see continuing. You know, and one of the things that I think and that's sort of interesting about this is we've been talking about DVDs. I'm not sure that, you know, all this talk about Blu-ray DVDs versus so and so on, I'm not sure that's really going to matter at all, because I really think that by this time next year, you'll be able to legally download pretty much anything you want to watch. You'll pay some sort of fee, anywhere from $1.99 to $5.99, something like that, to get a copy of whatever your favorite movie is. It may even be movies that are still showing in the theaters. So that's sort of an interesting thing that one or two companies are exploring right now. And it's not going to matter about the DVDs, because you're going to just download it and store it on your hard drive somewhere. Or, you know, you watch it once, you don't want to see it anymore, you just zap it and it goes away. And so, again, you know, an entirely different model, business model, than the one we're used to seeing from these movie studios. But, you know, I see this happening, and I see this happening in a hurry. I keep toying with this idea of a story where I like a column probably where I talk about this. And, you know, and you can talk all you want to about Blu-ray DVDs have this much storage and they're easier to use. But, again, you know, I don't think it's going to matter, because I think the real stories for video in the future is going to be the terabyte or so you have on your computer or on your server, and that's where the stuff stays.
Absolutely, and the big piece of that that's making all of this possible is the fact that your data access rates are getting faster and faster and faster and cheaper and cheaper and cheaper.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly so. I'm a case in point. These days I live outside Asheville, North Carolina, which is a neat little arty town in the mountains of North Carolina, and I live about 6 miles out. I live literally on a mountain overlooking a national forest, and I have in this house 3 megabytes downstream and 1.5 going up using ADSL, which is about twice as much as one of the very first commercial ISPs, Digix, had about 10 years ago when the web was brand new and this whole idea of the Internet being something you could make money from rather than just something for schools and for the military in case the atomic bombs ever started to drop. And, you know, and my mind boggles. I've got real bandwidth here in the middle of the woods, and that's many times more than this company that I helped the people put this first ISP together using Sun boxes, 12 years ago. It's kind of mind-boggling just how fast it's been.
Mm-hmm.
What services were you were referring to that have taken off in the past couple of weeks?
You know, I'd have to look up their names right now, and I don't have them in front of me. But if you look at any of the tech news sites over the last couple of weeks, just look for video and for movies and so on. You'll see them. I think Microsoft got into the act yesterday or today. I forget who they were allying with. But this doesn't require any deep looking. You'll find these folks, everywhere.
And are you?
So here we have a story. We just published this story over in PC Mag. Actually, it's a Reuters story we took from PC Mag. So all the networks have agreed that DVRs actually are good for television. A year ago, all the networks were saying DVRs, most of which run Linux, by the by. Were, you know, bad news, and they were killing them. Now they're talking them up and saying this is great, and how can we download ends directly into them. So there you go.
So what you're saying now, as a Linux user right now, I'd be able to start taking advantage of those services?
Yeah, they will be.
I will be?
And it won't be long. Yeah.
So you're saying that the companies, in your opinion, have come to their senses and said, we're not going to restrict this to only Windows users and require them to have Internet Explorer to access this information, or to Mac users.
Yeah.
With QuickTime,
yeah,
so it's going to be wide open.
They want to get the content out to as wide an audience as they can. And even though the Linux desktop market and the Mac desktop market is a lot smaller than Windows, they also know that Linux and Mac people tend to be early adopters. We're the people who try out new technology. We're the people who start buzz going. They've figured this out, and I really don't – I see them – delivering, I don't want to use the, I'll just use the word generic, these generic video streams that you will be able to view and store with a variety of programs, and I see at least some of these guys just saying, oh, well, here's the source code, have fun, here's how the codecs work, you know, have fun, build something that people can run it, just be sure to put a button on it so that they can pay us $1.99 or whatever to get our download.
Well, that's cool. One of the things that had really, you know, concerned me about 2 months ago, because I work for a school district, and I was in a meeting where they were talking about there are services out there that provide video on demand, particularly education,
right,
for school districts, educational videos and everything, and what they were talking about, though, was that, you know, the services are going to start changing. They're going to have, and there was another service they were looking into, and that you're looking at a lot of DRM and digital rights management and restrictions on what you can do with these videos and how it's been incorporated
right
into the service, and you're restricted in how you can actually play these files on your systems, what you can do with them. You can't, you know, take bits and pieces out of them and use them for educational purposes because that would violate the
right,
the license or the DRM and everything. But, you know, and I'm looking at this and I'm saying, man, I would love to be able to bring, you know, Linux desktops into the school district and take some of those old machines that are just running like dogs with the Windows operating system and put Linux on there and give them some more life. But then, you know, I can't legally put the codecs on it. We can't stream these videos because of the restrictions, you know, and like I said, that mm-hmm. that had me concerned. Now, with what you're saying, is hopefully in a year all that's going to be dissolved, and I think that, you know,
yeah,
partially
well,
it seems like a cash cow that certain companies would be throwing out should that be dissolved.
Yeah, well, when I say this, I mean things like popular media. I mean, like right now, you can buy episodes of Lost. Writing and from Apple, there you go, you got it. And so by that sort of thing, continuing particularly with popular media, so I'm talking movies and television shows. Now, what you're talking about, say, educational programs and so on, unfortunately, that stuff always tends to be trailing edge. So you're going to continue to see a sort of a hodgepodge of companies, a hodgepodge of codecs that's continuing to do that. They're going to continue to follow that business method, and so it's going to be a while for those businesses to change their ways because they tend to be really slow stick-in-the-mud type companies, and that's going to be a pain. But now, on the other hand, if you wanted to, say, listen to NPR broadcast, if you wanted to get PBS shows, there I imagine you can see some hope for those shows being available in a non-proprietary, vendor-neutral way, and those should be displayable on a Linux machine. If you're talking about an educational
program.
There's
things like the BBC is already doing that, right?
Yeah, exactly. The BBC, if you're in the UK, you already can do that. And I see PBS and NPR following that model here. I mean, NPR's National Public Radio is already heading in that direction anyway. You know, they've got their own things to work out. You know, again, I guess to go back to a theme I've been sort of harping on is, you know, the problem here has never been the technology. is the problem isn't even an open versus closed problem the way so many other Linux situations are. Now, the problem here is always it's always just been business models and people wanting to hang on to their property so tightly that in this modern world where broadband is everywhere, it doesn't make sense. And again, thanks to the disastrous attempts of the RIAA, people, the big not just people, but the big companies realize, you know what, we can't do business as usual. We just can't do it. So we better figure out ways to make money from this new way of doing it. And, you know, they are now. Thank goodness.
Yeah, I just... But when you say it's not so much about the technology as it is about the business practice, I mean,
right.
A lot of the stuff I see that comes out these days is either QuickTime format, Apple's MPEG 4 mm-hmm. for QuickTime, or Windows Media.
Right.
And again, we're back to that mm-hmm. whole thing is I can't legally play that.
And I think that's going to change in a great hurry. I really do. If you had to ask me which format's going to win, I'd bet on a non-proprietary implementation of MPEG 4.
Uh-huh.
It's out there. It works. And there's already non-proprietary versions of it out there anyway. So, you can do things like then put out HDTV in MPEG 4, and you get a whole lot more HDTV goodness for your bandwidth than you do with anything else. You'll see that, you know, once my, I can clear a tire of saying a year away, but, you know, a year away from now, DirecTV, for example, are going to have all their new HDTV satellites up there. We're going to see a lot more HDTV available if you're a satellite user because those satellites are going to be transmitting MPEG-4 down, MPEG-4 encoded HDTV programs down rather than today's MPEG-2, which is a lot fatter as far as video is concerned.
Well, I hope it all does turn around in the next year. That sounds like pretty exciting stuff.
I really think it is. No BS, I really do.
So you had mentioned that you were using iTunes through Wine, and have you tried using Sharp Music, which allows you to purchase?
No, I confess I have not tried that one. I am I'm a big iTunes fan. I'm actually I have always been mea culpa, I admit it. I've always been a big Steve Jobs fan ever since the original Macs. I loved the Next Station. For the longest time, I had a Color Turbo Next Station, which was in some ways still the coolest Unix Linux-based system I had ever had my hands on. Hopelessly obsolete by today's standards, but still in many ways the prettiest computer I have ever used. And so I'm just sort of sold on iTunes.
Is that the Mono Slab or the Cube?
The Cube. Actually, this was the Mono. I had a Cube too at one time. The wonderful, wonderful machines.
Those
even
are
in the Silicon Graphics books, the Silicon Graphics Indigo, which was also way up there on my list of favorite workstations. It's kind of odd to have favorite workstations, but again, I've been at this for a long time.
So you running OS X over there?
Yeah, I've got a copy of Tiger sitting here running. My actual desktop is I've got six boxes here, and I use a pair of KVMs so that they run through two displays and two keyboards and all that jazz. And I've got two XP boxes because I need to know what the enemy is up to as well. A Mac running Tiger. Another box running a really, really early version of Leopard, which is a Mac on Intel. And two SUSE boxes and a Zandros box.
So what's your impression of Leopard?
It's not here yet. There's a reason why it's not here yet. But it looks pretty darn spiffy, though. I have always, you know, to this, you know, you can go around and around about KDE versus GNOME, and goodness knows I have, and generally speaking, I favor KDE over GNOME. But, you know, you really cannot beat Mac Aqua. It is pretty. It is slick. Everything just fits together like a well-oiled machine. And it's just, you know, it's a step above anything else that's out there now. And the Leopard interface, at this point, they really haven't done much with it. It's basically that looks the same as Tiger. It's running on a Pentium 4 rather than a PowerPC. And, and that's fine. It works fairly well. You know, you can really tell this is alpha software. I'll be there, no doubt about it. But certainly, you know, come the day, whenever that day might be, that Microsoft Vista, the next generation of Windows, comes along, Leopard is going to be sitting there and waiting for it. And I, for one, because I have seen a lot of Vista as well, I don't see that Vista with its Aerial Glass interface is going to be much competition. I really don't. So if you want pretty, pretty desktops, you know, much as I love Linux, you know, Mac OS is still the way to go. Of course, you will also pay a pretty penny for that pretty, pretty desktop. But, oh, well, that's also something about Steve Jobs you just have to keep in mind.
What is it you find so pretty about OS X? I mean, because I find it a little stifling. I mean, it's kind of nice. I do like, you know, some of the features like true transparency, but I mean, a lot of people think it's the best thing since sliced bread, but I don't see it. I mean, what is it? What am I missing? Because I use it every day.
Well, here's the thing. There's always been sort of two schools of thought about how the interface should work. On the Linux Unix side, you've always had people who want the maximum possible amount of power from over their desktop. They want to be able to tweak and twist not just the physical appearance, but every process that goes on behind there to get the maximum amount of goodness from that machine. And that has always been the push of Unix and now Linux. On the other side of that coin are the Mac people, and they have always been about making the desktop as integrated and as cleanly meshed together as possible so that it is a seamless whole. And those are two very different approaches, and I can, for whatever reason, I can appreciate both. But people who tend to really be hardcore about Linux or Unix tend to just tell me exactly what you did. They don't see what's so special about OS X, and the flip and the reverse of that is, of course, the OS X people have trouble understanding why the Linux and people get so excited about, you know, the latest twist in KDE or GNOME or what have you. And it's really a matter of where you're coming from. If you want a desktop where the applications in desktop are all just one smooth continuum, where everything just sort of links together so transparently that you don't even or aren't aware that they're linking together, you'll be very happy with a Mac. On the other hand, if you want to get your hands in there and really make sure that one program you're running runs as best, as well as humanly possible, then you don't want the Mac. You want a Unix machine. I should add, though, of course, you can get deeper into the Mac and do those kind of things, too. But they don't make it easy because that's not the direction they were going into. You really have to be a real BSD mock kernel Mac expert at a level much higher than a Linux expert normally would be to get the same sort of performance benefits that a Linux user can get from the same box.
Fair enough. I get that. You know, what I would really love to see is better integration between Aqua and the X11 server on OS X.
Mm-hmm.
If they could just...
You and me both.
Oh, that would be so beautiful.
You and me both. Mm-hmm. Well, all I can say is that is, I know for a fact, one of the goals of Leopard is to make that whole thing at that level a whole lot more seamless than it is now. And I'm going, go for it, guys. I would love to see that done.
I got a question I really got to get to because Pat wanted me to ask this of you. But before I hit you with that one, I mean, you had just bringing up talking about Leopard, Apple's move to Intel architecture. Is mm-hmm. Do you think that's going to kill PPC Linux?
No. I've talked to some of the PPC Linux people. They're going to keep working away at it. IBM is certainly going to be more than happy to help people out who want to work on PPC Linux because their R and I series boxes are still, their mid-range systems are still power-based, and they're going to continue to be power-based going into the future. So PPC, and these days, though, of course, some people still run AIX and some people run OS 400, but more and more of these people are Linux. Even if Linux isn't the native operating system they're using Linux as virtual machines on top of AIX or OS 400. So, I mean, it's not going anywhere. It's going to continue to be a small, but particularly if you're in the business world, it'll be a very important Linux, and it's not going to go anywhere. IBM won't let it go anywhere. They need it.
So we're looking at something that's going to be more geared towards business class and not so much that somebody would probably run at home on, you know, their systems.
Yeah, I'm sort of waiting to see if somebody tries to build an honest to goodness power based Linux PC, an actual desktop machine. Some people have tried it, but nobody's really had any significant resources behind them. And I see as Apple moves away from the power market, you know, it strikes me anyway, you know, there's an opportunity here. I don't know if it's that big an opportunity, but if you wanted to have a power-based PC, it strikes me, you know, if you're not going to do it in the next 2 or 3 years, it's not going to happen. And, again, it'll still be there because there are all these mid-range machines that most people don't even know about, but they're the machines that keep bank branches going and keep half a dozen different McDonald's or whatever business going. Those back-end machines are still going to be running power, and I don't see that changing anytime soon. And they'll be running Linux on power.
All right. Steering it to another topic, going back towards KDE and GNOME, what's the deal here with Novell? I mean, first they said they were going to, mm-hmm. you know, drop or consider dropping KDE and replace using GNOME and SUSE, which SUSE has been always, you know, from my experience, really in the same court as KDE. I mean, those two seem to integrate together, and now they've changed their tune. Do you think it was just something that slipped out, or... did they make a mistake on their part in talking about doing this?
They just made a mistake, and because you're right, a lot of the SUSE community are heavy KDE users. I should know; I'm one of them. But you see, Novell also has Xeon inside them, as well as SUSE, and Xeon, of course, is the source of all things GNOME. Now, KDE and SUSE go together, but Xeon and GNOME were, for all practical purposes, the same thing. And so you have this conflict there, and they finally decided that to save their resources, because Novell was really trying to cut costs, they were going to go with just one supported desktop. They were going to still put KDE in the open community SUSE desktop. It would always still be there. It wasn't going to go away, but as far as the SUSE Linux Enterprise Server and the Novell Linux desktop, it was going to be just GNOME and nothing but GNOME. And not only did users all yell at them, but a lot of their internal people said, you know, particularly, you know, the SUSE people said, you know what, we have really worked hard at this, and it feels like you're sort of throwing all of our work out to do this. And someone also, I don't know who, but I'm sure someone also did the business case on it, not just a matter of, hey, we like this, this is our work, but someone said, you listen, it doesn't really cost that much more money, and that's what you really, Novell really wants to do is save money. It doesn't cost that much more money to continue to support KDE, because we're going to continue to write KDE anyway. You know, I mean, this is the desktop that we care about. So Novell, and I'll give them credit for this. Novell realized they had made a mistake. They realized they had not only alienated a lot of their user community, which is always a bad idea, but they had also alienated a lot of their best and brightest Linux people. And so they said, you know what? We blew it. Well, they didn't actually say we blew it. They used polite business language, but they admitted they made a mistake, and they did a 180, and now there they are. They're back to supporting both again. And, you know, given the circumstances, I think that was really the smart move to make. I don't think in the long, long term it's going to be smart to have both KDE and GNOME around from a business perspective, but you know what? That's the way the world is today, and for right now, for the next few years, that probably was the, in fact, I don't think it probably, that was the right move to make. If I'd been in a Novell board, I would have said, you know what? We've got to support them both, and that's all there is to it.
So what do you, in the future, what do you see as, and maybe this is obviously a loaded question.
Sure, load away.
Is it going to be GNOME? Is it going to be KDE for the business desktop? Is it going to be, you know, both?
The trend on business has been towards GNOME. I mean, you've got Red Hat clearly is committed that way. Novell was committed, of course, to both. In most people's minds, it was more KDE than anything else. But, at the same time, as I mentioned earlier, they had the GNOME people right in there. And, my honest answer is I just don't know. You can argue the virtues and vices of each one. You're blue in the face. Both of them have virtues. Both of them have vices. And right now, I really think that they pretty much balance out. I think in the open source world, the winner is much more so than in the normal retail world. The winner isn't who has the best marketing in open source. The winner is whoever does the best code. And right now, they're still neck and neck. Someday, somewhere, I imagine one of them is going to do, either one group is going to sort of fall down and not do the job, or one group is going to do something truly exceptional, and then that will become the dominant desktop. Or for that matter, though I think this is unlikely, it still may yet end up, I mean, they're so closely balanced, I think there's room here for somebody else to sneak out of the pack. I've never been that crazy about enlightenment, for example, but I've been hearing more and more people talking about it, so maybe it's time for me to take another look at some of the tinier, and enlightenment's not that tiny, but still some of the smaller desktops, and see where they're going. Right now, if I had to choose a winner, I couldn't. It's a dead heat.
Yeah, Enlightenment DR17 is pretty interesting. I mean, it's still in alpha, I believe, but it's something to take a look at. And of course, Link is trying to chime in there with XFCE.
XFCE. Yep.
Hope Springs Eternal.
And Fluxbox. You can't forget about Fluxbox. Fluxbox is really cool.
Yep.
I don't think it's going to make it into, like, the major desktop market niche,
mm-hmm.
but it's still really cool, you know?
Yeah, well, you know, that's one of the neat things about this whole Linux open source stuff is, you know, the little ones can keep going. It's not like the proprietary world where if something doesn't work, well, it's, you know, it's dead. It becomes abandonware. In Linux and open source, nothing ever really becomes abandonware so long as there's, you know, one person who knows C or C++ and is willing to keep pounding away at it. And so long as there's that one person out there, you never know. They might be able to find a way to...
Look at FVWM. People keep coding for that god-awful ugly thing, too. You know?
Yep, exactly so. Now, that one I don't see appearing... I don't see that one appearing at CompUSA anytime soon, but, you know, stranger things have happened.
Sure.
Window Maker. Ooh, ooh.
Please. Maybe not that strange.
Steve.
Oh, gosh.
We are out of time on BinRev, which means that part of our audience...
I see that.
...disappears.
Alrighty, well, it's been a pleasure talking with you folks.
Hey, it's been a pleasure talking to you. I appreciate it. I mean, you really... Like I said, it's been a couple weeks of, you know, doom and gloom from a lot of stuff that I've been looking at, and then you come on with this bright ray of hope, and I'm such optimism, and I would rather,
good to me.
You know, look your direction. Look at the stars that you're looking at.
Yep.
Yeah, well, and hey, if you look at my track record, you'll see I'm not an optimistic person, generally speaking. I tend to be pretty cynical about this stuff, but you know what? Right now is a pretty darn good time to be a Linux user. It really, really is.
Well, that's good. I hope I'm cheering you on, not cursing your name.
Okay.
I want to thank
you. Good night, folks. Yeah. And, you know.
Thanks a lot for coming on.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
We'll talk to you later.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Indeed.
Great having you on, Stephen. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Should I cut Link off, too?
If you have to.
Are you still there,
hey,
Link?
Hey, bite me. Don't be cutting me off.
This is
the Linux Link Tech Show, damn it.
I was concerned that we
I'll
would...
cut you off. I won't give you any more.
Yeah. I was concerned that we'd have a hard time, you know, finding stuff to possibly, you know, discuss with them. But I thought that was one of the best ones we've done yet. You know, it was easy.
That was really good. And I like his... Yeah, I like his optimistic view of things to come for Linux. That's
very positive.
I really hope he's right. That would be an exciting thing to happen, see some things turn around. I mean, it's been turning around ever since. I remember when Dan and I first started the Lug, and, you know, we were sitting in my basement amongst all the spiders, and we were talking back and forth going, you know, next year is going to be the year when they finally accept Linux as a server in the business place, and that came to pass, and, you know, that kind of thing. And it's just been ramping up ever since, and I'm excited to see some good things happening, you know?
I hear you. I'm so excited, man. When this show's over, I'm going
to
punch Alan in the mouth.
About other people that think good things are going to happen. Yeah.
Ooh. Any other good news this week, gentlemen?
No.
Thanks, Alan. Always the vocal one.
I get paid tomorrow.
So does my wife. What are you going to do with your money? What are you going to buy me?
Hookers and
I
beer.
I don't know, but I'm probably just going to bring it home and, like, look at it, you know?
And then pay some bills.
I'm going to look at it for 5 minutes, and I'm going to give it all to my wife so she can pay the bills.
That's it.
Hookers and beer. Hookers
easy
and beer.
Easy out. Next week is...
Hookers and beer.
Thanksgiving.
So don't forget the beer.
Is your business giving you a turkey there,
Thanksgiving,
Link?
Thanksgiving, where it's not hookers and beer, it's mashed potatoes and beer. What?
Is Call Solutions giving you a free turkey?
It's Novo One, by the way. But no, they are not going to give me a free... Not that I know of, anyway.
Oh, too bad. What about you, Link, Alan?
I would highly...
No, our company did that once. And they've been too cheap ever since. They gave us the coupons for Kings.
They actually give me the day off, you know?
Yeah. Do you have next Thursday and Friday off?
Yes.
No, just Thursday.
Oh, see, Alan does. I do. You're going to miss Black Friday, my man.
Lucky, lucky you.
That's the plan.
I refuse to leave the house on Black Friday, having had to work it for so many years. I will not go within 10 miles
of
a store.
Hey, you know
what? I used to do retail myself. I know exactly what you're talking about.
My wife says she's getting up at like 4 o'clock in the morning to go out.
Man,
like, have a good time.
You know, the only Black Friday I ever worked in retail was when I worked at Staples for a short stint. And it really wasn't that bad there on Black. But who wants to go to Staples on Black Friday?
I did pick up, I was just thinking of this, on it, that Jones Soda. I don't know if you've ever seen it. On it, they have turkey and gravy flavored soda.
I heard of it, but I never tried it.
I've got a six pack now on it. Down at Target, you can buy it. It's like $20 on it, but it's like
$20 for a six pack of soda.
There's six different flavors that all sound
Holy
sick.
Holy crap, man!
They all sound. It's like turkey and gravy. One is like cranberry or something like that. I mean, it's disgusting sounding, but I had to have one.
What did it taste like?
I don't know. I haven't tried it yet. I just got it tonight.
Oh.
I'm actually going to go back and buy another one.
Oh, man.
Because my Christmas party, we always end up giving each other gifts and stuff. That's going to be my gift at my Christmas party.
Hey,
I pity the person who gets my name.
I'll eat some asparagus and piss in that bottle right there and
sell
it to you for $5.
You don't have to do that. Let me see if I can find the flavors.
Call it bitter asparagus flavored soda. There's our explicit right there this week.
Yeah, bitter asparagus soda.
Oh. Gentlemen. What else? If Pat was here, he'd have something to say.
I don't know. What else?
What would Pat say?
He would have to say canonics.
That's it.
Canonics.
What would Pat say? It's a new
canonics
segment.
Something. Canonics, canonics, canonics. We know you're going to listen to this, Pat, so canonics, canonics, canonics. Somebody's running canonics, canonics.
All right,
and they like canonics.
Pack. The holiday pack. Oh, yeah, here you go. Brussels sprouts with prosciutto, cranberry sauce, turkey gravy, wild herd stuffing, and pumpkin pie.
Hey, you enjoy it, man.
And they actually have another. They have another one on it. That's broccoli casserole. Speaking of broccoli, on it, smoked salmon pate. I really screwed up that name. But turkey gravy, corn on the cob, and pecan pie.
Can you imagine my gas after that? Holy mackerel!
Holy moly!
What we really need to make sure is that
when you actually taste this soda, either Dan or I has to be present with the video camera, you know, so you can add it into the next DVD.
I just put the link up on the IRC for anybody.
Here's Alan with the soda. Here's Alan puking up the soda.
Yeah,
here's
I'm
my
sure,
dog I, eating it.
I'm,
here's
I'm
my
sure
dog shitting under the table.
It's got to be terrible, but turkey and gravy soda, you just got to have a bottle. Even if you never open it up, you still have to have one.
Oh, man.
I have to find the other pack now. I got the one from Target. Looks like I'm going to have to go to...
Yeah.
Oh, I got to go out to Pittsburgh to get the other one. That sucks.
You can't buy it online?
Do that or New York City or Trenton. Damn well if I'm never going to Trenton. That's damn sure. It doesn't say if I can or not.
Hey, I want to, give shout-outs there to IXCOM and the author of IXCOM, which, man,
yeah.
Whoa, worked great. Being able to transfer a call in and... to the conference so we can get Alan, Link and Steve and us all on at the same time.
Yeah, I'm actually using that as my client tonight, and it sounds actually really good, I think.
Yeah, thumbs up.
From my point of view, anyway.
I want to play something here quickly. Link, you won't be able to hear it, but I'm pretty sure you have it. We got an audio file today from a guy, so I want to play this. I'm going to turn you down because I don't want to blow my eardrums out or everybody else. So here's a quick audio file. Link, who sent that to us? Hello from Seattle. Eric from Seattle. Hold on.
Hi, this is Eric from Seattle. When I am not stuck in freaking traffic at 6 o'clock in the morning, I listen to the Linux Link Tech Show.
There we go.
Cool.
Thank you, Eric. You know, and speaking of people and our listeners, I'm really appreciative that a lot of people have signed up on our Frapper map. We're getting more every day, and it's nice to be able to see some faces there with people with pictures, even if some people don't put their picture but something else. It's still really cool. We got people in Egypt. We've got listeners in.
Oh, cool!
I haven't
looked at it in a while.
Yeah, I mean, there's more coming every day, and
we are attacking south of the equator now.
Yeah, Egypt. Yeah, I don't. We need some people in South America. I don't think we have anybody. We have people in Central America, not in South America. We need some more people in Africa and Northeast Asia and the Middle East countries. And we got. You know, really, it's really cool. I mean, tons of people in the U.S.
Do we have the admin thing for this one so we can, like, make it so it defaults so the map is a little bit farther out?
I don't know. I didn't sign stuff on it.
Yeah, okay. Find out from Pat. I forget who did actually sign us up on the webpage.
I think it was Pat.
Was it Pat? I know because I didn't check the webpage when it happened.
Yeah.
It's like, oops, sorry.
Yeah, we need an Antarctica. Australia's going there. I like it. It's some good stuff. Good stuff, yeah.
Gotta get some Russians, too.
That's what I was saying, you know.
You're going to help us plan our future vacations.
And, you know, we've only had
the hot chicks in Brazil to listen to us.
We had the Frapper map for, what, 3 weeks now, and Link finally signed up the past week?
Because he signed up on
mine. I was on the first day, man.
Why did I? Oh, you know what? You know what that was? I signed up to get emails when people get added, and it didn't work for the first week or so, and now all of a sudden it kicked in, and I think it posted you as being a new sign up. That's probably what it was. I'm sorry there, Link. Ay, ay, ay.
Yeah, just don't let it happen again, you know?
It won't. I blame Alan for that.
I smack you with the fish.
Blame me for setting up the bogus one. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Huh. I haven't played this one yet. Anything else tonight, gentlemen?
Not for me.
Good for me.
That's it?
Play us out, boy.
I gotta go to the bathroom.
I'm so glad to know that.
Pretty much that's why it's it for me, too, because, you know, I could talk for another half an hour, but I have to piss, so.
Well, everybody, thanks for listening.
Yeah, thank you very much. We'll play us out. And I got to turn down the volume before I blow everybody's eardrums out.
Yeah. No, thank you again for listening to us on episode 110 of the Linux Link Tech Show.
Yeah. Are you guys going to be here next week?
Should be, why?
Hell yeah.
I just, the day before that, I didn't know if anybody was traveling for the holidays.
Nah.
I'll be here.
I'll be there. Make sure you got the turkey and stuffing going on, man.
Well, Link doesn't have to be here anymore. Dinner. We just put him on the asterisk.
Well, theoretically, we could all just blow it on the asterisk if we had to. Now that it works.
You know, one thing. Does anybody listen to the Daily Source Code anymore?
Yeah, I do.
Link?
No.
What's he talk about anymore? I mean,
basically his the podcasting.com thing that he's got running.
What was the big brouhaha that he said no more mashups?
Oh, because he used to play mashups every, you know, his opening show with him and stuff. And he got their version of cease and desist things from what was it? The Dutch version of the RIAA, and I have no clue what it's actually called. I couldn't even begin to pronounce it.
DIAA?
No,
like R-I-A-D?
It's one of those, it sounds like one of those things that, you know, like Dutch, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
Type thing. For people who don't speak Dutch, and I hope I didn't curse anybody out. But anyways, he got a cease and desist, and basically he's, I guess he went and they tried to, what was it? One of the parliaments, he knows some people, I guess, and he went up and talked, and basically they're all saying that you play by our rules, you're not going to play at all, basically. So
I thought he said the rules were different over there.
Well, the rules are different, but I guess they can change them a whole lot faster than they can here. I guess they buy a whole lot more, whatever their version of senators and congressmen are. I guess they can be bought and sold a whole lot better than ours.
That's a bummer, you know. Well, you know what?
Although a lot of the music he's been playing, I mean, it's not bad.
Right.
You know, if you strictly listen to the top 40 crap that comes out, you're going to say, oh, this sucks. But if you, like, have always listened, like, I've always listened to college radio and stuff, where you don't hear top 40 at all. So a lot of the stuff that he's playing, and a lot of stuff that I guess you could pick up off the podcast music network or whatever it is, it's not really that bad. Obviously,
right.
It's not mainstream, of course, but it's not bad to listen to or anything.
So, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Now, he's getting revenue from his show, isn't he?
He has a couple of sponsors. I'm sure somewhere along the line he's making some money off of it. I know they're pushing that, what is that, iDog, I think. Seems like everybody involved with the podcasting network is pushing this iDog. It's like a Mattel or something like that. And he pushes some sort of iPod speakers, and I don't remember what they are off the top of my head.
See, we need to get some sponsors so we can have ads in the start, middle, end of the show. And,
well, most of his ads,
I
don't know about other people put him on there, but most of his stuff isn't really intrusive ads or anything, so I listen to him, you know, just ignore him just like I do regular ads.
Well, you go ahead, you Adam Curry supporter.
I listen to a lot of different
things. Why don't
things.
You go over there and marry him if you love him so much? No, you know what? That's great. I'm glad he's doing good.
Other than the pissing on the bottle
he's
airplane ride, which I didn't really need to hear, the last one which he did off the airplane was actually rather interesting because I love listening to the pilot talk and stuff and flying and that type of stuff.
See, I liked listening to him. The only problem was every day was just I don't have enough time.
I don't listen to that many podcasts anymore. You know, I've cut out a lot of them.
Right.
So I only, you know, and not every one of them comes out every single day. So, plus I drive a whole lot farther than you. I'm in the car for 2 hours a day. So
that does it. You know, after I get done listening to the GNU Linux User podcast and every episode they put out, I don't have time in my day anymore.
There you go.
So I like that podcast a lot. Thumbs up. And all the other Linux ones, LA, Linux Australia.
Senseo, yeah.
Linux Questions, Lug Radio. Was that Everybody Loves Eric Raymond? Read those yet? They're pretty funny.
Did you see somebody did a picture of them?
Yeah.
Everybody Loves Lug Radio.
Yeah, I saw that. And
so when's somebody going to do one of ours?
Nobody likes the tech show. It's just three blank panels. Nobody likes the tech show. What's going on with the guy from the Linux Box? Good question. You haven't heard from him in a little while. I guess he's still working.
Well, he was supposed to set up that new website, right?
Yeah. Hopefully soon. Although he said he wasn't probably going to get it off the ground until, the winter or so, or into next year. We'll see.
I think so, yeah. After Christmas, he said, maybe?
Something like that. Busy.
I have to shut down.
All right, well, we're gonna play some music out of here, and then that's it for that. Talk to you guys later. Thank you for listening.
That's right.
Good night.
Talk to you all next week.
Oh, yeah, don't forget to buy...
next time for 111, right?
Yep, 111. Check out the new Alice Cooper.
Send Pat an email. Buy a DVD from us.
Yeah, buy a DVD if you want.
Yeah. What they said.
Don't buy a damn thing. I don't know. Here we go.
There once was a man named Gold Roger, who was king of the pirates. He had fame, power, and wealth beyond your wildest dreams. Before they hung him from the gallows, these were the final words he said.
My fortune is yours for the taking, but you'll have to find it first. I left everything I own in one piece.
Ever since, pirates from all over the world set sail for the Grand Line, searching for One Piece, the treasure that would make their dreams come true.
Yo!
Yo, yo, yo!
Don't give it up, Luffy! Don't give it up, Zoro! Don't give it up, Nami! Don't
give it up!
Here's how the story goes. We find out about a treasure in the Grand Line, there's no doubt. The pirate whose eye is on it, he'll sing, I'll be king, I'll be pirate king.
Yo, 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 yo.
That's Monkey D.
Gonna be king of the pirates.
He's made a rubble.
Why did that happen?
Yo ho ho, he took a bite of gum gum.
His name's Alo, he's a samurai and a L-A-D-Y, Nami the Sly. The pirate crew coming through doing that thing with the king. With the king, gonna be pirate king.
Dago, 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 oh oh.
Set sail for One Piece. It's the name of the treasure.
You know I want to tap that ass, right?
Well, you were making egg poo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's over.